hunters and gatherers, and then we had the village cultures that developed and eventually became the Olmec, and the Olmec fell. We had Teotihuacan coming along and it fell. We had classic Veracruz coming along and it fell. Now we're over here with Toltec and they're going to meet the same fate. Mm-hmm. So you had Olmec here, then you had Teotihuacan here, and you had classic Veracruz here. Now you're going to have the Toltec here, and they're going to come to the same situation. So, and throughout civilization, you'll find that, that there's a rise and a fall. And by God, there's got to be a lesson in there for us someplace. Because in each case, while they don't really know what happened, there's the possibility of internal strife. There's the possibility of the breakdown of the economic base. There's the possibility of invasion. And you just think of what's going on all over the world, and it doesn't change.
Well, I think the other thing that, I don't know about the Toltec, but certainly the hypothesis for the Maya also, is environmental degradation.
Right.
In other words, that they simply, finally, the environmental balance was out, they overdid it. And
how did that happen with the Maya?
Well, the economic base of the Maya,
or the environmental degradation.
Well, they had crop failures.
They had very thin soil there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And up in the Yucatan, there it's just a limestone shelf. And then there was invasion, you see, but economics, the economic base, which has included in it the environmental.
Yeah.
Elements,
and that factor, I think, is being raised more mm-hmm. these days, you know, with environmental consciousness,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, another thing, like this man was talking about Eastern, East Berlin and West Berlin and all really Eastern Europe and its incredibly quick fall.
Mm-hmm.
He's a professor of communications, so I actually thought it was already communications, that when people are sufficiently aware of what's going on in the world, they're not going to put up with a very dissimilar situation for no reason, just because the political hierarchy wants it that way. And I wondered, in these ancients, as they became more and more trade conscious, and not
yep.
that they had TV, or not that they had radio, or not that they had newspapers or Time magazine, but
there was still that sophistication, you see, that was built into their civilization. They started out small, and then they got stratified, and they had the rulers, you see, that were very powerful, the priests that were very powerful, the artisans and the artistic group. So you see, you find that same thing coming along in there, that there is dissatisfaction. And usually it's based on, that guy's got more than I have, you see. And when you, to me, it just kind of, it's almost frightening when you see the repetition of what's happened over time. And you see it in your own day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can think back to Britain and how it had this great empire, and we had France that had the great empire, and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics now that had the great empire. And the same thing is happening, and you wonder, what's down the line for those of us, you see, that we just seem to close our eyes to all those things that caused the destruction of empire. Well, to begin with this Toltec business, we're in a different cultural era now. If you pick up one of those chronological tables there, and the classic days are over, and it's about the year 900. When we have the classic Veracruz civilization sort of decline and then finally dissipate, this era begins, and it's about the year 900 A.D. And you need to look at the world at that time, their world at that time. Can you find them down there?
Mm-hmm.
And notice that the Aztecs spin right off from that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've marched down the line quite a ways there. We need to look here and see what was going on in the country here. Remember, here we've got Mesoamerica. This is just kind of a sandwich situation. What's that mean? Okay. Then, right in here, you had the semi-civilized farmers that lived just above the fringe in there. And then you had the Chichimeca, the barbarians. And they, of course, you got the mountains coming along here, you got mountains coming along here, and you have sort of a desert area in there. And then you have 2 degrees of Chichimecas. We'll make one like this, and we'll make the other one like this. And the Aztec had a really interesting way of referring to these barbarians. They said they were the real Chichimecas. Mm. And that was the really barbarous group that lived up here in this area where they lived a very nomadic life. And they lived in caves, and they lived in shelters that had skins over them, and they wore yucca fiber sandals, and they just lived from hand to mouth, you see. So the Aztec called them the real Chichimeca. We have to remember that now we've got a difference. When the post-classic period begins, we have written history, because the Aztecs knew about it from oral tradition, and they told the friars who wrote it down. Mm-hmm. So now we really know what happened. We don't have to speculate quite so much. So they told about these people that were really barbarous people. Then in between the fringe farmers and the real Chichimeca, there was another Chichimeca group. They were barbarians too, but they were not quite as barbarous as the others, and so they called them the Tamime Chichimeca, the Tamime Chichimeca. And when you have environmental problems up here, you know what would happen. The real Chichimeca would push the Tamime Chichimeca, and then they would push the farmers, and so you had this fluid business. Right here at the edge of Mesoamerica. And then there came a period of real drought and hardship, economic hardship. And if you have that paper there that shows the figure in it, that kidney-shaped thing is what eventually became the Toltec Empire. You should be looking at that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But notice that arrow coming down there into that that kidney-shaped piece, which is the Tolteca Chichimeca. Now we think that, and it's pretty certain that group of Chichimeca were the ones that had picked up some skills from the fringe farmers. They knew a little bit about agriculture. They knew a little bit about making pottery. They knew a little bit about how to get along with one another. In other words, they were larger groups than the nomadic groups up here. So they swept into this area simply because they were starving to death. And there was a little bit of a void that had been left here by the fall of classic Veracruz. And so they swept in their groups, and under one warrior king who was called Mixcoatl, or Smoking Mirror, and he was a warrior in the full sense of the word. With the post-classic period, you have the beginning of the warrior group. There was much more emphasis on militarism. Just think of how they got where they were, you see. They were a fighting group, and to make their way in here, that is almost reasonable that they would be a warrior group. Even the art changed, and it became much less fluid and beautiful and curly, and it became more, you'd have much more rigid lines, and there seemed to be less beauty and more abstractionism in their art even. So the whole universe of that little place right in there, the universe of the central Mexico here, became much more militaristic. And it showed up in everything. It showed up in their the hierarchies. The priesthood is no longer so important. You see, the big wheels are the ones that were the warriors. And one of them really emerged as quite a leader. Eventually they established a seat of civilization in a place called Colhuacan, and you should find that it's kind of at the bottom. I ran those too darkly, and you can't see it too well. But you should find Colwood Con. It's down toward the bottom of that. And that's where he started his, really what would become the civilization of the Toltec. Well, Mixcoatl died, and his son came into power. And his son was called Topiltzin. And Topiltzin moved the seat of civilization up to Tula. And he was an interesting fellow. He confused everybody by taking the name Quetzalcoatl and hanging it onto his own name. And so people who study these histories get all confused because Quetzalcoatl was a god. He was the god with the feathered serpent coat. And also he was a man, Topiltzin. Interesting thing about Topiltzin was that he had fair skin, long hair, and a black beard, which was not too common. Well, everything was going along just fine, but Topiltzin was a peaceful person, and this didn't please the militarists, who were part of the Tolteca Chichimeca group. And so, oh, see, all he would give as a sacrifice was birds and snakes and butterflies. And that didn't please the opposition. There's always an opposition, too, as you study these things. There's always an opposition force. And this opposition force thought he was lazy, and they were the cult leaders of Tezcatlipoca, who was the god of life and death, the giver and taker away of life. He was also the patron saint of sorcerers and the patron saint of the cult of giving human blood to make things continue. And right there in that little paper that I duplicated for you, you see that figure. This is Xipe Totec, who is one of the gods of the Tezcatlipoca group. And he was the god of the flayed god, they called him. And he was supposed to be the god of vegetation and agriculture. Well, what they would do was when they had a sacrificial victim, and if you were involved in war and taken as a prisoner, that's how you ended up, as a sacrificial victim. And they skinned that sacrificial victim, and the priest who was impersonating Xipe Totec put that flayed skin on his own body, and this represented the emergence of life. Now that's about as ugly a thing as you can think of. And a strange story can be told about that, because after the disintegration of the Toltec civilization, they drifted back to Colhuacan, some of them. And of course there were many little groups jockeying just to get along, and one of the leaders of one of these small groups married his daughter off to a larger group with the hope that it would consolidate their forces and so they would be safer. And he went to visit this king and found that they had used his daughter as a sacrificial victim. And
wasn't
they,
the Aztec, wasn't that the early Aztecs who did that?
No, this was the people from Colhuacan.
Well, did they remove their hearts first, or these people were being played alive?
Well, once they take their heart out, they're not very alive very long, I'm sure.
And then they flayed them.
And then they flayed them, right. And sometimes they ate them, cannibalized the victims. But that is a story that's down the line after the fall of the Toltec civilization.
Does any of this seem to be tainted by the Padres? What I'm saying is that sometimes they wanted to portray their predecessors as more horrendous than maybe they really were.
Well, I don't know. These were pretty horrendous people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so they implicitly believed in what they were doing. They believed that this was necessary, you see, in order to, for life to continue, that in order to satiate the god, the gods, they had to spill human blood. And I suppose it was done with the best of motives, but it's very, very difficult for those of us in our culture to absorb that without being revolted and horrified, you see.
But it doesn't seem specific here. I believe the ancient Hebrews did that also.
Yes, they did. And all through civilization, we've made our own sacrificial victims, if not people, in the physical sense, people in other senses, you see. So history continues to repeat itself, doesn't it? Well, the people who were followers of Tezcatlipoca, of course, had to get rid of Topiltzin. He was too peaceful. And so they rose up against him and chased him off. And, of course, where he went was, he went to the east. And he followed the shoreline of Mexico up into the Yucatan area. And they have records in that area that show that about 987, a warrior conqueror appeared and took over many of the ancient sites. Now, he was called the Feathered Serpent, Quetzalcoatl. And of course, it's this mythology, you see, that carried over to the Aztec people. So when Cortez came sailing across the ocean, here was this person who had said he would come again, this god with the fair skin and the black beard. You see, so you had this business of the ousted leader moving up to Yucatan, setting up his kingdom by putting down the Maya of that area and then eventually absorbing part of their culture. But this carried through, this myth. So when Cortez came over, Moctezuma thought, now this might be the guy that was coming back, you see, from the old Toltec Empire. Funny thing about the Toltecs, after they were destroyed and they were no longer a threat, every single group that was a functioning civilization claimed ancestry in the Toltec. And that was because they were such awesome people. They said, well, there was no distance they couldn't go, and there was nothing they couldn't do. And so they represented sort of cult heroes, even after they had been disbanded. Well, Topilson's out of the way now. And you'd think that everything would be just fine. But who knows what happened? Something happened. And there was economic, it could have been environmental. But eventually, this empire that had been built up fell as well. And the people dispersed to other areas. The last leader of the Toltec Empire, I can't remember his name. I can't remember his name. But anyway, it was Huemac, H-U-E-M-A-C. And he went to Chapultepec. And if you've been to Mexico City, you've probably gone to Chapultepec. And he was so disheartened at what had happened that he killed himself. Now, there were little Toltec factions that went here and there. And we know that the center of their empire was destroyed. And it was destroyed in anger because a part of it was burned. And the evidence of the burning is still there. Along the walls, you can see where the burning took place. While the empire was functioning, they had many successes. They were highly skilled in the carving of obsidian and onyx, and it was a great item of trade goods for them. they had merchants who traveled all over. You can see all those arrows going out from there in every direction. And it was a functioning civilization in every sense of the word. They had artists, they had their architects, they had everything that we see as belonging to a functioning civilization. And at the time that this civilization was at its peak, in the city itself of Chula, they estimate from the housing compounds that they found that there must have been 30,000 to 40,000 people there, which doesn't seem like a great amount to us. But that was in their city, which occupied about 5.5 square miles. But out in the area beyond that, there were spheres of influence. But if you think back to this business of this being a warrior group, an upstart warrior group that started this, and then this thing evolved into a real sophisticated civilization, but they're still suspicious of everybody, and they built their city. In fact, it was moved from Kulwakan to Chula, because on three sides, it's defensible.
Mm-hmm.
It's built on a big limestone shelf. And you see, they only had to defend one side of it then. You see, so it was very defensible. Well, let's look at a few of these places in Chula. But before you do, I want to show you what you're going to be seeing a little bit, so you'll know where you are. Again, here's due north. And here's another case where they built their city on an axis that's just about 17 degrees off due north. And this happened quite often. You have, as you come up over here, your limestone shelves coming along like this. And you come up, and the first thing you see is a ball court over here. And then in the middle, there's a kind of just remnants of an altar in here. Then over here to the east is what must have been their largest pyramid. It has not been excavated, just a little piece of it. And then over here, this great thing that you see on the skyline that appears to be something that has been a large courtyard or salon. And then here you have what looks like a temple area, and on top of the temple area you have the great warrior stela, and they once held up the roof. Now back here there's another ball court. This one has really not ever been investigated, but this one has. And then coming along here, well, there are some more salons. See, there are four salons here. There is a wall. This wall is about 120 feet long, and it is covered with carvings. Now remember that their art is not many representations of the gods. We're much more militaristic, and their art shows that. Okay, let's see what we got here. We need to have the lights up. And we're going to come up over this bank, and the first thing we're going to see is this, because it's right in front of us. And this is the ball court that has not been really investigated. It's been cleared of all the growth, but it hasn't been investigated. They think that there were once stone slabs that were over that slanting area there, but they were taken away by the Aztec. The Aztec discovered this place, and they used it as sort of a source of building material. And they dismantled things. Archaeologists have had a tough time here because much of the material has been carried away. And this is what the land looks like. We're on a limestone shelf, and I think the last time I was there was in August, and it is the beginning of the rainy season. But you can see it's very dry. Here's another view of that same ball court.
I'll do it here.
Do we get it a little bit better? There we go. Thank you. And in one corner of that same ball court, you see what must have been the scoring ring for the ball game. These people used the ball game too as a ceremonial, right? And here it was really played for keeps, just like it was in classic Veracruz. Very often, the captain of the losing team was sacrificed to the gods. Not, they did not always flay the sacrificial victim, but they did on occasion. Now, you can see something of the vegetation there by what they have put around it. It's cactus and very hardy plants. And that just lies evidently where it fell. Now there's this other ball court and this one. You can see evidences that once those circular scoring rings were attached to the side of the playing surface. Also in this same ball court is a piece of the fallen warrior. Their statues were mostly the ones that you see focused on the military. And this is just the trunk of the person. And I presume they just cleared around it and put some little cactus there, and there it is.
I've forgotten, though, that statues and things, though, were volcanic rock, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They
were volcanic rock.
They were out of place.
Mm-hmm. If you'll just pitch in any time, because I know you have been here, Evelyn, and anything
yeah,
you can
but
add.
I mean, some of it in the platforms are limestone, but that's a hard volcanic rock. Yeah.
And it lasted.
Yeah.
From the ball court, and we're just looking over the corner of it, you see this building that is in the background, which is the Temple of Quetzalcoatl, and it has the Atlantean figures on the top, and you can see the columns and the square pillars that held up a long roof. And if you came as a visitor there, there was a bench all along the whole way, but only part of it still remains. Over on the right, you can just see a corner of it, is the Great Pyramid, which must have been quite a structure, but now it has just one little corner has been put back together so you can see it. There's also that altar in the middle, which has screened out here by the side of the ball court. That is quite a steep stairway going up to the Temple of Quetzalcoatl. And the Atlantean figures on the top, the four of them coming across, once held up the roof of the first temple. There were two temples on the top. There also were two columns that represented a serpent with his head on the ground and his body up, and the rattles were on the top. And if you came as a visitor, you would come through that vestibule from the right, and you'd go up those steps, and you'd go through that corridor there. The square things that you see at the back were warrior figures that were just carved on sort of cube-like pieces. Again, you can't help but notice how scrubby it looks, and the lack of trees. This would have been the Great Pyramid. And you can see that just a small portion of it has been excavated, but you can see that it was a tiered pyramid. And when you climb up on top of that thing, you see just stuff, pieces of things lying around. Anything you can add about that Great Pyramid, Evelyn?
No.
There's just not much there.
No.
They've had a tough time with this particular site because the facing stones were carried away. They do know that it was built of rubble. It was faced with slabs, and on top of the slabs there was put a kind of plaster, and that the plaster was painted because they found vestiges of that, you see. In the front is you find the remains of this central altar. And they think that that was a place for ceremonies because there's evidence of a stairway on each side. This was kind of messed up by one of the early archaeologists who thought it was a tomb. And he dug down into it and disturbed the configuration of the altar, and so it's been difficult for the people who followed to try to extract the history of the whole thing. You can see this vestibule must at one time have been attached also to the Great Pyramid. And we're still standing in the ball court here looking across. This is several acres, this great plaza. This is called the Burned Palace. This particular part, there are three salons here. And you can see how these columns were constructed. There was a rubble core, and then they were plastered over the top and painted. So it must have been quite a sight in its day. Each one of the salons had a pit, and that was for the sacred fire. And each one had an altar, and you can see in the background there, the altar. Authorities tell us that the Toltec were not as sophisticated in their construction of things as the Teotihuacanos or the classic Veracruz, that they didn't have that skill. And it kind of makes sense because they hadn't had that long to develop it, you see. They were kind of an upstart civilization. This is a chacmool, and I'm sorry Betty's sitting on that. She shouldn't have been sitting on it in the first place, and I should never have taken her picture. This is a chacmool, their altar. And you notice he's wearing an ear plug and square plugs in the ears. He's wearing a helmet. And I think we have another photo of it without her on it. No, we don't.
Now, did the Toltec took the chacmool to Chichen Itza then?
Beg pardon?
Did the Toltec take the chacmool idea to Chichen Itza?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, well, I mean,
they
what,
took
what
it to Chichen
Itza. You see a Chichen, our Toltec.
Also, the Aztecs right borrowed it.
Yeah.
She's sitting on a kind of a dish. Now some of these, a few of the chacmools are still at Tula, but most of them have been carted off.
No.
They were taken by the Aztecs, and they were taken by other groups. But this, it's really bowl-shaped thing, and the assumption is that it was for sacrificial things, such as the heart, that they would put there.
But the Toltec originated the chacmool.
Yeah. They were the ones that started this business. Well, in fact, they were the ones that began the warrior cult.
Right, yeah.
The warrior cult. The beginning of militarism with the Toltec. I'm going to back up a little bit. This, what you see, whoops, didn't go back, did it? What you see behind here is the wall. You see, that wall closes this off from another area. This is a part of the great vestibule, and the thing that distinguishes this from the salons is the shape of the pillars. Now you can see how long it is. It's over 400 feet from one end of this to the other. And it at one time had a roof, and there were benches there, so that if you were witnessing a ceremony that was taking place out on that altar, you could sit in the shade. And believe me, once you walk around that place very long, you could appreciate a little shade. Now you see, here comes the wall, and that's on this side. Notice how the vegetation is. It's just persistent. Notice that roof, because that roof shelters one remaining piece of this wall, which demonstrates the bas relief that the Toltec practiced.
Wasn't that painted too?
Beg pardon?
Wasn't that painted too?
Yes, it's painted, and some of the color remains. If you know where to look for it, there's color on all of these, which tells us that they really were painted in brilliant colors. And you see how steep the stairway is? And it's always interesting when you look at those stairways, how narrow this part is. And you know that they must have been smaller people with smaller feet than us, because when we travel up there, it's a little difficult. At one time, there were balustrades coming down on both sides, and there's a little evidence of them still. And they had a stylized serpent motif as you go up. This is the bench, and I'm sorry it's so dark, because it is really a graphic piece there. And that bench once went all the way down, and it shows marching priests going down. Can you add anything about this?
No, it was 1986, so it was been a while.
Yeah.
But that's why I remember the color.
Uh-huh. But the fact that it's endured, because this civilization fell in the year 1200, the fact that it has endured, and that the Aztec didn't cart that off, the only reason they didn't was that it was buried under soil. They hauled off the rest of it. And I always think, you see, that's what happened to them. And this happens cyclically. You see, what happens to one happens to the other. That's what the Spanish did to their temples. They hauled off the pieces and built their own temples from them. Now we're up on the top with these Atlantean figures, and they are representations of Quetzalcoatl. They are warriors. And they are about 15 feet tall. And you can see that they are in sections.
Are these reproductions or are these the originals?
Pardon?
Are these the originals or are these?
These are the originals. They found them buried under this temple. And so they hauled them out. You can see they're tenoned together. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Just like a spool that hooks on there. And you have to remember that they have no beasts of burden. All of the power was muscle power. They found these buried underneath. One of them is a facsimile because the original is in the museum in Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to Mexico City Museum of Anthropology?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, the one that is there is the one that's farthest left here. Now, it's interesting to know what the warriors are wearing here. They're wearing a butterfly symbol around their necks. The headdress is the feathered serpent, and around their body they have a kind of a triangular kilt. They're wearing sandals, high back sandals. That's a Chichimeca carryover. You see that high backed sandal, and they're carrying in one hand a group of darts, and in the other the atlatl that they use to hurl the dart. They're quite formidable things. You just stand and look at them in awe, and you know that they did at one time hold up the temple. Here you can see that on their backside they're wearing a kind of a shield, and their little bare fannies are sticking out there because the kilt only extends down in the front. Notice the background area, what the land looks like. Out in there are many unexplored mounds. Again, you have the same thing. The site has not been fully explored. Any questions about those creatures? These three are the originals. The one that is this way and would be in the shadow there is the one that is made of concrete. Again, these are very hard materials. There again you can see the way they were put together. This is the great temple. And they have just restored this little piece of it, but you can climb up on it. And they think that that piece down there with the hole in it came from up above and was at one time part of the structure that fell as the whole thing disintegrated. These tiers were faced with flat rock, and on top of the flat rock there was a kind of plaster, and then it was painted. And if you prowl around, you can see evidences of paint. I took that from the top of the Great Pyramid. because I wanted you to see the land formation in the back there. You can see you're in volcanic, in a volcanic area. We're now at the other ball court, and this is just behind the pyramid of Quetzalcoatl. This one is just a little bit different style. There are two stairways, and they are sort of opposite one another. And the theory is that those were the places where the opposing teams came down. This one is shaped like a big eye, and you're looking at one end of the eye, and then there's a long corridor going down, and then there's another eye. The one that you saw first is a very, very long one. It's about 300 feet. This one is shorter. This is the other side, the other stairway coming down. Here too, there is evidence that there were rings or some kind of scoring device that was mounted on one of the sides. This is a bit of sculpture that is on one corner. There are niches also that they assume were niches for the gods. You can see some of the regalia there that the ball players must have worn. This is the serpent wall, and it's a puzzling thing. You see a skeleton emerging from the mouth of the serpent, and then you see some of the pieces of the person scattered along in the serpent motif. Here the serpent's tail comes up to the top.
Why do you say emerging and not disappearing into?
You know, I have read and read and read to try to find out what that particular motif means, and there is nothing. It just always says, and the skeleton of the man is emerging from the serpent. Now, the feathered serpent had a number of functions as a cult object. It was thought to be an emblem or a symbol of immortality because of its shedding of skin. You know. It was also felt to be the patron saint of art, literature, and learning. But, so help me, I can't tell you why that is that way. Do you know, Evelyn?
No.
But you find it.
There, or that step pattern underneath?
Doesn't that look like Anasazi and the Arizona cultures?
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of Mitla.
Yeah.
Ah, Mitla too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course, these people did get down there.
But does that indicate rain? Or for that step pattern is that a hieroglyph for rain? I don't know,
really. I can't tell you that. But that same fret pattern that is just straight lines shows up at Mitla, and it shows up at some of the other places down in the area around Monte Albán.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You see that. And you see it in our Southwest cultures, that same motif. And there he is again. This is on the corner. And they just march all the way down. And this is 180 feet long. It's a long wall. And when the archaeologists first started working here, it was had fallen down. And so they found the pieces and put it back up and put it together. But it also had been buried in soil, and that preserved it, or it would have been hauled away. You see, I'm just going down the line here, and you see the same thing happening.
Is that pigment or is that pinky?
No, that's paint that's left, yes. The fact that it was covered up helped it to, you know, to survive.
Pretty animated skull.
Yeah. It's just the repetition as you go on down. And again, you see the repeated pattern down below. And up above, and I don't know why I didn't get that, there is a merlin, a thing coming across the top, that is supposed to represent the cross-section of shells. And when you know that, you can see it, that it represents the curlicue of the shell. Which it's a strange pattern that they have. This is the museum, and I really don't know whether those are just made from concrete or whether they found them someplace. And the man at the museum didn't seem to be able to tell it. But the museum itself houses many interesting artifacts of this particular civilization. You find the braziers where sacred fires were burning. You find representations of their pottery. They became rather sophisticated makers of pottery. In the museum too, there are pieces, examples of their obsidian carving. So it's well worth your time to stop there. Do you remember going to the museum, Evelyn?
Okay, we didn't spend as much time there because the grandkids were little and one had to go by their patients. So,
It doesn't look like much when you come up to it, but it is well worth the time that you take. Now, it's out in the blazing sun, and if you're there in August, it's hot. I mean, they don't have nice little air-conditioned places for you. It's very hot. You sweat a lot. And then if you're lucky, you find this tree. And it's one of the few trees on the grounds. And so there's always somebody sitting under it. I don't know how I caught it when there wasn't anybody under there. But there wasn't. So this is what was left, you see, after the split between the people and the eventual decline and destruction of the Toltec, that's what they had left.
Where was the evidence of the burning?
It's on the burned palace, and I don't know whether you can see it or not, but that's what took off that plaster. But also along the walls, and I don't have a photo of that, around the northeast corner of the palace of Quetzalcoatl, you can see burned places coming up. But they know it was destroyed, it was a violent destruction of the site. And the people, what they did, some of them stayed on there for 50 years and attempted to keep going, and eventually they all drifted off to other centers. Now, one of the places that they went was a little place that you can still see in Mexico City called Teneyuca. And there was a Toltec warrior who, with his little band that he was able to keep together after this disintegration, settled in this place in Mexico City that's called Teneyuca. And you can get there, and to get there, it's just 6 miles from the center of Mexico City. You ride a bus and then another bus until you get to a place where it's very simple people live there. It's a strange experience to go to Teneyuca. And I'm gonna take you there. Oh, we're going backwards, we need to go ahead. And Xalatl and his people built this temple in Teneyuca, and you can visit it. And it has 7 superimpositions, one temple built on another until the 7th one is on top. And you can go in that little door and you can see it. And all the way around this, there is a panel of serpents all the way around the temple. See them marching all the way around there with their little heads sticking out? But again, don't you see the repetition of the pattern, the tears that you saw there at Tila? Where they're attempting to set up and start over again. And they do. They're using the same building system too. They're using a rubble core, cemented together, than plastering over it. This is another place that you can visit that emerged from the Toltec through the Aztec. The Aztec claimed Toltec ancestry. They admired many things about those people. They took all their gods and made them part of their own pantheon. They took their plan for the city and made it the plan for theirs. Again, the straight axis and the compounds coming out to the side. And this little temple is not too far from Teneyucca, and they found this one under another one. And it retains, they didn't have to do much with it. And you can look at it. It's one of the very early Aztec temples. It's called Santa Cecilia, if you're ever there. You can walk up there, and those are braziers up on the top. I don't know whether we ever get up there. No.
But this is Aztec, you said.
Beg pardon?
You said this is Aztec.
This is Aztec, okay. Right. Because the Aztec just rolled right out of the Toltec. And actually, this place and Teneyucca are contemporary to one another. Teneyucca would be late Toltec. And the Aztec just rolled right along. And you can see on that chronological table that their period of ascendancy just matches the Toltec descent. Now, they don't know who did the Toltec in. The Aztecs never owned up to it. But you see, the Aztecs were also Chichimeca. And they think that the real Chichimeca came down and wiped out the more civilized Chichimeca. And actually then that those people went on to found the Aztec civilization.
And where did the word Mexica come from, or Mexico?
Mexica, they were, that's just another term for the Aztec.
Oh, Aztec.
Mm-hmm. If you go to the Anthropological Museum and you go into the Mexica room, you'll find that that. Can you add to that, Evelyn?
No, that.
Yeah.
They prefer that. Right?
But again, you see that cyclical business, the fall and the rise of another, on the tail of the first one. Well, I'm so glad you came.
Were the Chichimeca the antecedents of the Yaqui, or?
The Aztecs of what?
Were they the antecedents for the Yaqui?
I don't really know, the Yaqui?
Yeah.
Now, who are the Yaqui?
They're kind of up in the Sierra de Chihuahua, up in northern Mexico, and have lived very simply. They were the ones, if you see the ballet folklorico, they're the ones that do the deer dance. And they were supposed to be able to hunt deer and so on.
Well, you can't tell me that they're not all related in there, that they don't just come down.
Yeah.
Because the Aztec admit to being Chichimeca. Mm-hmm. They have Chichimeca roots and they're proud of them, mm-hmm. because that was the warrior group. And all of the gods of the Aztecs were ones that emerged from the Toltec civilization. And the cult of taking blood, you see. As a source of the life continuing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Yeah.